Hello, everybody. I am Bill Buckmaster, along with producer Rosemary Brand. Rose and I welcome you to the Buckmaster Show on this Wednesday, September the 10th, 2014. We are live each weekday during the noon hour on Tucson's AM 1030 KVOI, The Voice. We are live streaming at buckmastershow.com and kvoi.com. Podcasts and our complete show archive available 24/7 on your schedule, anytime, anywhere in the world, by visiting buckmastershow.com. Well, perhaps the most dangerous threat to humanity today is this all-too-common assumption that now that the Cold War is over, nuclear weapons are no longer a threat. But since Eric Schlosser's Pulitzer finalist book titled Command and Control, Nuclear Weapons, the Damascus Accident, and the Illusion of Safety was released last fall, many of Mr. Schlosser's concerns about the safety of America's nuclear arsenal have proven to be true. We will talk with Eric about some of those concerns during the next half hour. His book, Command and Control, was recently released from Penguin Books in paperback edition. Eric Schlosser is the author of the New York Times bestsellers Fast Food Nation and Reefer Madness. His work has appeared in The Atlantic Monthly, Rolling Stone, The New Yorker, Vanity Fair, and The Nation. Let's join now Eric Schlosser on the Buckmaster Show live line. We'll have him with us in just about a few seconds, ready to go, talking about a book that I found to be not only fascinating, but a book that I found to be very, very scary concerning the American nuclear arsenal. It's something that all of us assume is under, well, very secure, that the arsenal does not have issues, but that is not the case, as Eric Schlosser points out. Mr. Schlosser joining us now. Eric, how are you?
Good. How are you?
Doing very well. I have to tell you, I was very not only entertained by your book, but very, it's a scary book, to put it bottom line. I mean, you say that the greatest immediate threat now facing the United States is the danger posed by our own nuclear weapons, not only our own, but nuclear weapons generally. We do assume, Eric, that our arsenal is safe and secure, but as you point out, it is not necessarily the case in this country, is it?
Well, you know, the book is about the problems we had with our nuclear weapons during the Cold War. And we came close on a number of occasions to having American cities destroyed by accident by American nuclear weapons. Now, today, our nuclear weapons are safer in many ways than they were during the Cold War. Part of the book is about the effort to add safety mechanisms to our warheads and bombs. So things are safer with our own weapons today, but I'm concerned about the weapon systems, the missiles we have, the bombers. The Minuteman missile was put into service in 1970-71, and it was supposed to be retired in the early 1980s, and it's still in silos in the Great Plains, ready to be launched. That's a problem. The B-52 was designed in the late 1940s, introduced in the early 1950s. We haven't built one since John F. Kennedy was president, and that's still our principal nuclear bomber. And even more concerning are the computer systems and the infrastructure and the wiring that connects all these things. So I'm not saying that we're going to have a nuclear accident tomorrow, but these are the deadliest machines ever invented, and people need to know about them, and we need to be having a national debate about them.
Now, you put a lot of work into this book. I think, was it 7 years of research into this?
You know, it took me 6 years to research and write it, yeah.
And what was the genesis of the book? Was there an incident or something that you had heard about? We'll talk in a moment about the Damascus, Arkansas incident, but what was it that got you on the trail that eventually led to Command and Control?
I was spending time with the Air Force. I was interested in the future of warfare in space. So I was spending time with the Air Force Space Command and the U.S. Space Command looking at, you know, the future of laser beam weapons and directed energy particle beam weapons. And a lot of the officers I was spending time with had begun their careers as launch officers in missile complexes. And it was a natural career path if you knew a lot about intercontinental ballistic missiles that you would then be a good person to work in space systems. And when I was hanging out with these guys, they started telling me stories of the Cold War, and they started telling me nuclear weapon stories. And I was amazed by some of the stories I heard, and the one story that really stuck in my mind was the one you mentioned, the story of a nuclear weapons accident in Damascus, Arkansas, that occurred in September 1980. And I couldn't get that story out of my head. I decided to investigate it, and the more I looked into it, the more incredible it seemed.
Really, it's a little-known story of this incident in Damascus, Arkansas, where technicians and servicemen struggled to prevent the explosion of a ballistic missile carrying the most powerful nuclear warhead ever built by the United States. How close, Eric Schlosser, did we come to the brink of a major accident?
It could have been catastrophic. That warhead had three times the explosive force of all the bombs used by all the militaries in the Second World War combined, including both atomic bombs. And that warhead had been cited in a top-secret study just a few years before this accident, and the study had concluded that the warhead had inadequate safety mechanisms and was vulnerable to a possible detonation during an accident. Now, in this case, it didn't detonate full scale, because if it had, much of Arkansas would have been destroyed and the course of history would have been changed. But you wouldn't want to repeat that accident 5 or 10 times with that warhead just to see if it would go off, because it might.
790-2040, 790-2040, the Buckmaster Show live line. David has called the live line and has a question for Eric Schlosser, the author of Command and Control. Go ahead, David.
I have some information. I saw a documentary a while back about when the Cold War ended and Russia inherited all the nukes from the Soviet Union and they wanted to get rid of them. So they sold them to us, and they're selling highly enriched U-235 uranium to us to de-enrich for power plants. And it went on, they're shipping a lot of this stuff over here until a whole bunch of it turned up missing. They don't know where it went. Then after that, the Russians agreed to de-enrich the stuff so it couldn't be made into bombs, but it's too late. A whole bunch of it turned up missing. They don't know where it went. And it could be right now in the hands of ISIS, and they may be making a crude bomb, put it on a freighter, and bring it into New York Harbor or Long Beach and set it off. Who knows?
Okay. Eric, have you heard anything about that uranium lost?
You know, there's good news and bad news.
Okay.
I think that's a wives' tale. I think that the uranium that the former Soviet Union shipped here was, in fact, sent here. And it's at the Y-12 facility in Oak Ridge, Tennessee, in a brand-new fortress-like building that they built to house that uranium and uranium from our old bombs. So that's the good news. The bad news is the Soviet Union never really had a full accounting of its plutonium and uranium. And they had thousands of tons of this stuff. And they only started to figure out how much they had once the Soviet Union collapsed. And there's no question that some of that stuff may be unaccounted for, and that other uranium and plutonium is being stored in civilian facilities, other parts of the world, that could be easy to steal. And for someone like ISIS or Al-Qaeda to make a nuclear weapon, a crude nuclear weapon, they would only need about 140, 150 pounds, even less, of this highly enriched uranium. So I'm not sure your caller is right about the shipments from the former Soviet Union, but there's no question that perhaps the greatest national security threat the United States faces today is a terrorist improvising or stealing a nuclear weapon and detonating it in one of our cities. And it's possible, and that's why we need to be vigilant, and that's why we really need to be investing in securing all this nuclear material.
Can you give us sort of an overview, Eric, about the inventory of how many nuclear weapons do we have in this country, and how many are there estimated to be in the world, actually?
Right now, they're estimated to be roughly 17,000. And that's an unbelievably high number when you think of what one or two of them can do. But at the height of the Cold War, there were probably 60 to 70,000. So that's a great reduction, and that's good news. About 90% of the nuclear weapons in the world are possessed by the United States and Russia. And so far, the United States and Russia have really brought down the size of their arsenal. Now that we have the beginnings of a new Cold War, however, that trend may be reversed. And I'm very, very concerned about the rhetoric from Russia, the boasts in Russia about their nuclear arsenal. And we don't want another Cold War arms race because, as my book shows, we barely survived the last one. But there's been some highly irresponsible rhetoric out of Russia. And if it's true that they've been violating some of the arms control agreements, that's going to be a real setback for reducing the danger of nuclear war in the world.
All right, before we take our first break, let's go to Chuck. Chuck is on the Buckmaster Show live line calling 790-2040, and I believe Chuck says he is a former Titan II commander. Go ahead, Chuck. You're with Eric Schlosser.
Yes, Mrs. Schlosser. I believe the site you're talking about was a former Titan II site in Damascus, Arkansas.
That's right.
Am I correct?
Absolutely.
Sir, that nuclear warhead could never have exploded. Never, ever, ever, ever. I was on duty at the time of that accident, and that warhead could never have detonated.
Hmm.
Never. So
well,
I have to disagree. I know the insides and outs of that weapon system, so from, you know, every wire in that system, and it could never have happened. Anyway, that you don't have to worry about that system anymore. It's been long since retired.
Yeah, but
Hold on, let me respond.
Yeah, I want to hear what... go ahead, Eric.
I honor your service. My book is based largely on interviews with people who served in bomber crews and missile crews. I interviewed many Titan II crew members as well as their commanding officers. But what you have to understand is I also interviewed the weapons designers at Sandia who worked on that weapon. And there was such compartmentalized secrecy during the Cold War that the people in the field, in the Air Force, who were handling the weapons, often were not being given accurate information about the weapons by the weapons labs like Los Alamos and Sandia and Livermore. And at the same time, a lot of the weapons designers at Los Alamos, Sandia, and Livermore were not getting information from the field about what sort of things were happening with weapons, what sort of accidents. So, you know, you don't have to buy my book. You can get it from a library. But everything I say in there is heavily footnoted from documents I got through the Freedom of Information Act, and you would never be allowed to have a warhead on an American missile today with the sort of safety mechanisms that the W-53 warhead had in 1980, because we now know they were completely inadequate, and that warhead could have detonated in an accident. That's conclusively true, and since my book has come out, I've visited the weapons labs, and there's been absolutely no contesting the factual accuracy of my book. So I have great respect for your service, but unfortunately you're wrong, and the weapon that you were working near down the hall was a weapon we'd never be allowed to put in the arsenal because it just isn't safe, wouldn't be safe enough.
All right, Eric, we've got lots more to talk about. Stick around. We've got another break coming up with Eric Schlosser. We're going to take a break here, short break here from the fine folks who make the Buckmaster Show possible here in Tucson. Back with Eric Schlosser right after this.
If you want the great taste of bottled water without the hassle of going to the store, call Culligan and ask us about the Culligan bottled water delivery service either to your home or to your place of business. Culligan bottled water is as pure as it gets. The basis of the treatment of the bottled water is steam distillation. Its processing and its cleanliness is a healthy alternative to other beverages. Culligan water is fresh and delicious. One sip will tell it all. And since Culligan water is delivered right to your door, residential or business, you won't have to lug heavy bottles. Whether you have city or well water, Culligan can make your water taste better with an easy solution that fits any budget. Right now, for a limited time, you get 30-day full money-back guarantee, trial to include. Water dispenser free for 1 month. Initial 15 gallons of water free. Thereafter, $6 per month on the dispenser and $6.95 per 5-gallon bottle with an annual service agreement. Call Culligan at 792-9700 or visit us at arizonaculligan.com. Culligan, better water, pure and simple.
Today's rapidly changing world brings challenges and opportunities. At Pima Community College, we are working with business and community leaders to develop programs that provide the right training for today's high-demand jobs. Whether the goal is a new career, transferring to a four-year college, or lifelong learning, Pima Community College can help you open the door to new opportunities.
For more information, call 206-4500 or visit pima.edu. Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico make a great getaway for a weekend or longer. It's just 3 hours or so from Tucson and 15 degrees cooler to get to an area with so much to offer, from hiking, camping, exploring downtown historic Silver City, or just relaxing in a lovely environment. Visit southwestnewmexico.org for the complete list of great places to stay and visit in Silver City, Grant County, New Mexico. Everyone is invited to tour Veterinary Specialty Center Tucson during its all-day 10th anniversary celebration Saturday, October 4th. There will be something for everyone, including live action in the surgery department and doctor dress-up for the kids. Plus, your tour pass doubles as a raffle ticket with a chance to win great prizes. Veterinary Specialty Center Tucson at North La Cañada Drive and West River Road, home of Specialty Vets for Special Pets. Widened and improved roads, new bike lanes, sidewalks, pedestrian crossings, and bus pullouts. Many of these safety improvements are funded by the Regional Transportation Authority through its 20-year plan, which is making a difference in our lives.
Hi, I'm Lori. I live near the Twin Peaks Interchange. Since that new interchange and road opened, life has become a whole lot simpler. The new road saves me time, and it's a beautiful drive. I love it.
The RTA, delivering our promise to you since 2006. Visit rtamobility.com or Facebook.
Ah, it's 6 a.m. and my flight leaves for Denver in 2 hours. But no need to rush. Because I'm flying out of Tucson, I have some extra me time, which means I can relax and start my day the way I love to start every day, with a run, a hot shower, and breakfast with my family, not a 2 hour drive in rush hour traffic.
Flying from Tucson International Airport is convenient and cost effective. Check out our cost comparison calculator at flytucson.com or text the word compare to 51313. Fly Tucson. It's the way to go.
Devereaux, Arizona inspires hope in the lives of the most vulnerable members of our community, our children. In Pima County, there are more than 4,000 children in foster care that need your help. Devereaux, Arizona's foster care program gives you the training and support you need to make a difference in the life of a child. Donate, volunteer, or become a foster parent. Find out how at devereauxarizona.org or call 520-296-5551.
Welcome back to the Buckmaster Show. Eric Schlosser is with us, author of Command and Control, Nuclear Weapons, The Damascus Accident, and The Illusion of Safety, published by Penguin Paperbacks. Eric is with us on the Buckmaster Show live line. Eric, what do your sources say about Iran? How close is Iran to a nuclear weapon?
You know, nobody really knows yet, but there's no question in my mind that they've been trying to build one. And there's no question in my mind that if they aren't stopped, either through diplomacy, and hopefully through the diplomacy, or through some sort of attack, they'll get a nuclear weapon. And that will be disastrous, because if Iran gets a nuclear weapon, there will be a nuclear arms race in the Middle East among the Shia and the Sunni. And it's my own view that the more countries get nuclear weapons, the more nuclear weapons there are in the world, the more likely one of them is going to be used. And we've just forgotten how catastrophic that is. A major city has not been destroyed by a nuclear weapon since Nagasaki in 1945. And we don't want that to happen again anywhere in the world.
And why are we so complacent? A lot of it, I suppose, has to do with aging. The baby boom generation remembers the Cold War, but a lot of people born way after that have no idea what we were up against.
Yeah, and, you know, sometimes good things happen in history. The Soviet Union collapsed without a Third World War. The Berlin Wall came down. Eastern Europe was liberated. And I think people were so happy when those incredibly good things happened that there was sort of an amnesia settled in. And there was this notion that the problem had been solved, but as I said earlier, there are still 17,000 nuclear weapons, and, you know, 6 or 7 of the thousands of those are held by Russia. So we need to focus on this issue. A huge proportion of the people in the United States weren't even born when the Soviet Union collapsed and have no memory of the sort of daily dread that, you know, people lived with during the Cold War and the fear that the world could be annihilated at any moment. So, you know, without terrifying people so they can't sleep at night, and I don't feel like we're doomed. I don't feel apocalyptic, but what I've learned has left me very concerned. And this is a big problem, and we need to deal with it and greatly reduce, if not eliminate, the threat of nuclear weapons.
We talked about Iran. What about Pakistan and the nuclear weapons perhaps threatened by extremists?
Again, that is a huge risk. In Pakistan, you not only have extremists outside of the military who want to perhaps steal a weapon, but there are also extremists within the government and perhaps within the military. And Pakistan has the fastest growing nuclear arsenal in the world. And their rivalry with India in many ways mirrors our rivalry with the Soviet Union. They're having the same sort of arms race. The difference is they're neighbors. And there's something about the hatred between neighbors, particularly when there are religious differences involved, that's much more intense than the sort of hatred we had with the Soviet Union. I mean, the Soviets were many thousands of miles away, and we disagreed with them, and we opposed them throughout the world, but I think the India-Pakistan rivalry is much more bitter and therefore even more dangerous.
And we haven't talked about North Korea.
Yeah, North Korea and their regime is not the sort of country that you want to have with nuclear weapons. And they really do need to be contained, because if they continue to expand their arsenal, there will be pressure on South Korea to get its own nuclear weapons. And there's even talk in Japan of wanting to develop nuclear weapons. And, you know, we don't want more and more countries with nuclear weapons, because eventually they'll be used.
Eric Schlosser with us talking about the nuclear weapons, but of course you're very well known for your book about fast food nation, bringing greater public awareness to the fast food industry. Do you see some progress being made with the fast food industry responding to folks wanting perhaps more nutritional meals?
You know, I see a little bit of it. I see window dressing of some healthier items on the menu, but basically the major fast food chains are still earning most of their money selling unhealthy food and targeting very poor minorities with that food. The encouragement I take is really from outside of that industrial food system. I think that in the more than decade since my book came out, a food movement has arisen in the United States. People are much more aware and trying to eat healthier. There are farmers markets. There's a huge increase in organic production. So wealthy and well-educated upper middle class people are eating much better. And what I want to have happen in the next decade is for this healthy food to be made much less expensive and for it to be available to all people in the United States. So I'm optimistic, but there's still a fair distance to go.
You know, getting back to the nuclear missiles and the Titan II and the silos that really dotted the landscape in this country, we had a couple of them right here in southern Arizona right now, the Titan Museum. It's been made into a museum. What has happened to a lot of those silos that were deactivated?
Well, I would encourage all of your listeners to go to the Titan II Museum south of Tucson. It's mm-hmm. extraordinary. The Titan II is the biggest missile that we ever built, and I can say that with words, but when you stand at the base of it at this museum and you look up, you get a sense of how powerful these weapons were. It's really a national treasure, that museum and the Pima Air and Space Museum. Most of the abandoned silos have just been filled in, but there are a few of them that some people have turned into idiosyncratic homes that they have renovated, and I guess if there's a nuclear war, they'll be amongst the safest until they have to come out of there. What's remarkable is how many silos we still have. If you drive around eastern Colorado, western Nebraska, in Montana, the Dakotas, you can sometimes see just off to the side of the road. It looks like there are telephone poles in a field with a barbed wire fence around it. And those are our missile silos. I drove through the missile fields recently, and it's remarkable how, you know, they're just there, unmanned, just part of the landscape. There are nuclear weapons many more times more powerful than the bomb that destroyed Hiroshima, just sitting underground in the Great Plains, ready to be used at a moment's notice. So they're out of sight, and I think that's one of the reasons that they're out of mind, but we really need to focus on this issue.
And, of course, then there's the delivery system with still some of these silos active. Then there's the submarines and the air. So yeah. Is it split pretty much even, or how is that distributed, the nuclear weapons force?
Most of our nuclear weapons, most of our nuclear weapons are today carried by submarines.
Okay.
And after that would come our missiles, our land-based missiles. And the bombers are currently not loaded and ready to go with nuclear weapons, but presumably during wartime it wouldn't take too long to get the weapons out of the bunkers and start loading them up. So in terms of, if we were to go to war, very quickly, it would be the submarines and the land-based missiles that would be used.
Eric Schlosser, thank you. I want to give folks information about your appearance coming up tomorrow night up in Phoenix. So thank you very much for spending a half an hour with us here on the Buckmaster Show.
Thanks for having me.
Eric Schlosser, author of Command and Control, Nuclear Weapons, The Damascus Accident, and The Illusion of Safety. It's published by Penguin Paperbacks. He will be signing and discussing the book tomorrow. On Thursday, 9/11, at Phoenix at the Changing Hands Bookstore, East McClintock Drive in Tempe. That gets away at 7 o'clock in the evening. We thank Eric for being a guest here with us on the Buckmaster Show. We'll be right back with Dr. Victoria Mazes.
Here in Tucson, we love our beautiful mountain views,
but large windows and sliding glass doors are huge energy zappers.
At American Openings, we build our doors just like our energy-saving windows to keep the heat where it belongs, on the outside. No matter the style, American Openings will create your doors right here in Tucson at a fraction of our competitors' costs. And although the price is less, our quality is excellent. Call today and enjoy our beautiful views year-round without losing your cool.
Call 664-1202 or visit AmericanOpenings.com.
Today's rapidly changing world brings challenges and opportunities. At Pima Community College, we are working with business and community leaders to develop programs that provide the right training for today's high-demand jobs. Whether the goal is a new career, transferring to a four-year college, or lifelong learning, Pima Community College can help you open the door to new opportunities.
For more information, call 206-4500 or visit pima.edu. Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastro pub, serving an impressive menu of craft beer and fine fare. Choose from more than 175 beers from around the world, plus wine and a full bar. Enjoy delicious soups, salads, burgers, sandwiches, hearty entrees, and more. Craft beer, fine fare, great service, and stunning views. Noble Hops, perfect for lunch, dinner, happy hour, late night, and any time in between. Open daily at La Cañada and Lambert Lane in Oro Valley.
Want the best care for your companion animal? Then Veterinary Specialty Center of Tucson is the place for specialty vets for your special pet. With a state-of-the-art, award-winning facility, only the Veterinary Specialty Center of Tucson delivers compassionate, comprehensive veterinary emergency and specialty care 24/7 in a wide range of fields. Veterinary Specialty Center of Tucson at North La Cañada Drive at West River or online at vscott.com. That's VSCOT.com.
Ready to do some antiquing? If you love a special one-of-a-kind object like I do, I strongly suggest Adobe House Antiques, specializing in early 20th century European and American art, and they have the best selection in town of antique light fixtures. Adobe House Antiques in the Jostler Design Building at 2700 North Campbell, 325-9439, and on the web at adobehouseantiques.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local independent nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Tucson Desert Art Museum, Tucson's newest art museum, is home to one of the premier collections of pre-1940s Navajo and Hopi textiles, exquisite classic and contemporary paintings and photography, early maps and historic artifacts. Visualize history through art at Tucson Desert Art Museum on East Tanqueverty Road at Sabino Canyon Road, just west of Udall Park, and on the web at TucsonDart.com. That's TucsonDart.com.
Welcome back to the Buckmaster Show. Our contributor on health is Dr. Victoria Mazes. Dr. Mazes is the executive director of the University of Arizona-based Center for Integrative Medicine. She is a very busy person. She is not only the executive director, she's also professor of medicine, family medicine, and public health. She's internationally recognized as a leader in integrative medicine and is committed to pioneering change that can help solve America's healthcare system problems. Together with her team at the center, she has created and implemented a national scalable education model that teaches physicians lifestyle change. She's helped develop an innovative integrative primary care clinical model, and she is carrying out a comparative effectiveness trial exploring clinical and cost outcomes and is developing non-invasive research tools that measure health and well-being, as well as the impact of where one lives on our health. She is the editor of the Oxford University textbook, Women's Integrative Health, and author of Be Fruitful, The Essential Guide to Maximizing Fertility and Giving Birth to a Healthy Child. Dr. Mazes, good to see you.
Thanks. It's great to be here.
So does where we live impact our health? Something I've suspected all along.
Oh, absolutely.
We haven't really talked about that, but it's in the introduction. I was thinking, how big a deal is that?
Well, you know, I think one of the most obvious and maybe, not science-based, but if you go to a fancy hotel and mm-hmm. you want the view of the ocean as opposed to the one of the highway, which one costs more?
I would certainly prefer the ocean.
Yes, most of us would, right?
Jack up the price about 50%
at least.
That's
exactly right. And you know, here we live, and some people have just absolutely spectacular views of the mountains, and you know that those views increase the price of the home. The same construction cost in theory. So I think at a deep intuitive level, we know that having a beautiful view makes a difference. But there's actually scientific research going back decades where patients who had a room that looked out at a brick wall took longer to heal, needed more pain medicine, and were slower to be discharged than patients who were having the identical surgery but lucked out and got the rooms with the view of a park.
Yeah.
So having a view is clearly good for our health.
That's just something I suspected. And as you said, intuitively, we kind of suspected this and we know this.
Right. But the thing is that having research that bears it out, and that's what the Institute for Place and Wellbeing is actually important, because we have a choice. We can build brand new hospitals where every room, you know, looks out at a brick wall or has no windows. Or we could say we've got to design these so that they actually have vistas, so that they give people the chance to look out at a beautiful, peaceful, natural setting that helps induce healing. So having the evidence also then generates the business case for building things in a certain way.
Well, nutrition is going to be our topic for this half hour with Dr. Mazes. And nutrition, of course, is so critical to good health. Yet, physicians, folks who are training to be doctors, receive very little nutritional education in medical school. And why is that?
Well, it's a very important question. why that is and what we can do about it. Our former dean of the College of Medicine, Dr. Jim Dolan, says we could be teaching nutrition undergraduate as a requirement to get into medical school. So the packed curriculum in and of itself is one of the barriers to bringing a meaningful amount of hours. Right now, that's estimated that less than 20 hours across 4 years of medical school. But when you think about the number of people who at a root cause, their diseases are due to nutrition, poor nutrition, consequences of poor nutrition like obesity, consequences of poor nutrition like increased cancer and heart disease. It's truly shocking that we don't better educate our health professionals how to answer very basic questions that patients have about nutrition.
And kudos to you and your colleagues. There's a major piece that's coming out. It will be published this month in the American Journal of Medicine. And it really is, Dr. Mazes, a call to action for medical educators nationwide. The piece is about this deficiency of nutrition education and medical training.
Yes. So as you mentioned, medical students don't get educated, but the other place you could put it is in residency, which is when people specialize. It's when you become a family doctor or an internist or a cardiologist. And interestingly enough, if you look at internal medicine, and they're the primary care providers who take care of people who have heart disease and take care of and hopefully help prevent cancer diagnoses, well, they have 0 hours of required nutrition education. Cardiologists, it's the leading cause of death in the United States.
You're not going to tell me that they have.
They have zero required hours.
Can't believe it.
Pediatricians, look at the epidemic we have of childhood obesity. 0 hours of required education in nutrition and residency. The only residency review document that even mentions nutrition is family medicine, but they don't set a required number of hours.
Hard to believe, and yeah. I'm sure there. This is just, is it just a historical thing that doctors just, that this was, what was nutrition thought of? I mean, how was it thought of in the past?
Yes, that, well, it's again
gets overlooked.
A great
question. I don't understand.
It's a very important question, and I don't think I've ever heard a very good reason for why it's not included in a meaningful way. The data, and that's one of the things that this article in the American Journal of Medicine points to, is just stronger and stronger for the impact of smart nutritional choices, whether that's healthy fats, whether it's low in processed carbohydrates, eating lots of vegetables, a plant-based diet. The data is just stronger and stronger, and yet doctors don't learn it. Patients think doctors learn it, mm-hmm. by the way. Patients mm-hmm. think they can ask their doctors, but for the most part, doctors are not learning it. Our Center for Integrative Medicine is a notable exception. In our fellowship and also in our residency training, we put in enormous amounts of nutrition education so that the doctors who get this training, and now we're training about 1,000 people a year, can actually get the information they need.
The public has a chance to get involved with finding out about the latest nutritional research findings. I know it's a little bit in advance, but I would mark your calendars now if folks are interested in nutrition and health. Coming up the first week in May, there's a big activity.
Yes. So as one of our commitments to this subject, we have been putting on an annual nutrition and health conference, and this year it'll be in Phoenix, May 4th through 6th, and it'll be a wonderful conference. It always is, that combines physicians, registered dietitians, nutritional scientists, chefs. Some of the fun things that we do are Dr. Weil always does a cooking demonstration. He's a wonderful cook.
He is a wonderful cook, and he's got several best-selling cookbooks to his credit.
Yes. He's also going to be speaking about some of the nutrition myths that are out there. We're going to have a little bit of focus this year also on the role of physical activity, surprise, surprise, in maintaining a healthy weight and a healthy lifestyle. It's just going to be a fabulous conference.
Well, getting back to that paper that's going to be published this month in the American Journal of Medicine. Hopefully this will be a wake-up call to med schools around the country, and if not around the world, to take more interest in nutritional training. I mean, you're close to this every day. Is the word out that this is becoming more important to med school?
I think so, and I do think that there are some hopeful signs. So in addition to our center, just as an example, tomorrow I was asked to judge a debate in the family medicine residency, and there'll be three teams debating whole food diets versus the kind of Atkins paleo versus Mediterranean diet. There is a program called the Nutrition and Medicine Project that's at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, and there have been some efforts by the National Cancer Institute to institute training programs around nutrition education. And so I think that the consciousness of the need for this continues to grow.
Well, I still can't believe the cardiologist, as important as nutrition is to heart health, are not getting nutritional education in school. That one, I learn something every day here, Dr. Mazes. Anyway, Rose, this would be the time to take a break, but when we come back with Dr. Mazes, the new study on low-carb, low-fat diets, that's next on The Buckmaster Show.
Hi, I'm Dr. Kevin Lehman. I've got one wife, five kids, two grandchildren, and I'm afraid I live in a place where some of those scorpions get in the house, and I'm here to report one of the smartest calls I ever made was to my friend Shelby Hawkins at Five Star Termite and Pest Control. Guess what? The only scorpion the Lehmans ever see is a dead one. Call.
We're Five Star Pest Control. We know what bugs you.
Hi, I'm Steve Christie. I've served as an RTA board member since 2009 and through last year as its chairman. The RTA continues to be a most successful regional effort, with the RTA and our member jurisdictions completing so far more than 540 construction projects to reduce congestion, increase our safety, and improve crosstown mobility. As part of the original Citizens Advisory Committee, I'm proud of our citizen-driven plan as well as the RTA's accomplishments. We deliver, we promise. Learn more at rtamobility.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Vero Mori is Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, panini, and salad is homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. And now at Vero Amore's lovely new location within the remodeled Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, Vero Amore is proud to announce an expanded menu and bar offerings with 16 microbrews on tap and 14 keg wines, along with two separate cooler rooms to keep the beverages at just the right temperature. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino, and on Dove Mountain Boulevard in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore on the web at veroamore.com. As a small business owner, I know the importance of a certified public accountant you can trust. That's why I recommend my CPA, Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates, proud sponsors of the Buckmaster Show. Located at 2919 East Broadway and on the web at flowersrieger.com, or follow the live link on buckmastershow.com.
Jerry! What's wrong?
The client conference call is right now.
I thought it was next week.
I don't have the presentation ready.
Okay. Blame the internet. Say it went out.
They'll never believe that. They know we have Cox Business. Our internet is too reliable and is 100 times faster than basic DSL.
Say customer service is closed.
Cox Business has 24/7 support.
Well, say it would take too long to get a technician here.
No, they know the award-winning customer service is local. They told us to get Cox Business.
The call has started.
Good morning.
I forgot about this meeting. We have terrific internet.
Get Cox Business Internet and Voice for only $99 per month. Speed options up to 100 times faster than basic DSL. Plus, get your first month free. Visit coxbusiness.com and switch today. Ends 1/4/15. Price excludes taxes, fees, and may be subject to minimum service requirements. Visit coxbusiness.com for internet speed options and details. Actual speeds vary. Other restrictions apply.
Welcome back to the Buckmaster Show, and I want to tell everybody that this portion of the news is brought to you by Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. You know, Rose, I think they've got something going on just about every weekend over there. I have in front of me all the activities going on. They've got the 10th annual Gila River Festival, celebrate United States' first wilderness river, the Gila, and it's only 3 hours east of Tucson. And the elevation is over 6,000 feet, so that really makes for some mild days, nice cool nights. You can find out all about the great things to do and places to stay, like Casitas de Gila guest houses, by going to the southwestnewmexico.org. That's their great website to find out what's going on over in New Mexico. Again, it's southwestnewmexico.org. We're going to continue on now with our discussion with Dr. Victoria Mazes. Dr. Mazes, we had the author of Fast Food Nation. We had Eric Schlosser on the program for the first half hour. And, of course, his new book deals with nuclear weapons, but he's very famous for a book that came out 10, 12 years ago. I know you've talked with him. You had him on a panel a few years back, Eric Schlosser. You heard him say in our interview today here on the show that he doesn't think there's been a lot of progress when it comes to getting the fast food industry to think more good nutrition.
Well, I don't know if the fast food industry is dramatically changing, but I think the world in which we live is dramatically changing. You know, if you think back 15 years ago and you went into Safeway, you didn't find a huge organic section.
No.
You know, you had to go to the equivalent of
specialty
Whole Food. We didn't have Whole Food then.
Yeah.
Right. So now any store you go into in town has an organic section. When you think about how many farmers markets we have here in Tucson and community supported agriculture, and you look at the linkages that have been made, for example, between some of the organic growers and the farmers and our food bank, the community garden projects that are happening in collaboration with some of our schools, I see a tremendous amount of change over the past decade or so.
Let's talk a little bit about this new study, Low Carb, Low Fat Diet. This was written about in the New York Times and other places. Is it going to change anybody's thinking about low-carb, low-fat diets?
Well, you know, sometimes people get a little polar. This was a
diet
study that
du jour.
Was... Yeah.
Diet of the day.
Yeah, that is the worry. You know, it's just, okay, here's some more information. But I think there's some important take-home points. First of all, it was a study that was a year long. That's good. It was of 150 men and women who were either overweight or obese, and they followed either a low-carb diet or a low-fat. And the people who followed the low-carb diet actually lost more weight and had greater improvement on things like their cholesterol, on their triglycerides. Both groups had improvements in terms of their blood pressure. And there's been, you know, some back and forth about the experts who position in one diet camp or the other. But I just think some take-home points are really worth making. First of all, we have to let go of the idea that fat is bad for us. I mean, we have gotten that pitched to us for so many years during the low-fat era, and still when you go into a grocery store, there's all these low-fat products. And this study just adds to this body of evidence that shows fat is not bad for us. We need more subtlety. We need to understand there is different kinds of fats. The fats that are in nuts and avocados is good for us. A handful of nuts a day has been associated with weight loss. You know, we used to be told, don't eat nuts, they're fattening. Oh, yeah. And instead, it turns out that if you eat a handful of nuts every day, it's satiating. It gives you that good mouthfeel. You don't get as hungry. And you tend to lose weight. I think we also have to accept that processed food, things that are made from flour and sugar, are probably not so good for us. They give us these bumps of blood sugar and then bumps in insulin, and that has an inflammatory response. And sometimes our blood sugar goes up and then it drops off and we get hungrier. So we've got to limit those things. Those are just not going to turn out to be good for us.
And I was going to say that Julia Child, thank you, Rose, for this, used to joke while dumping butter into everything she cooked, you need a little fat to absorb the nutrients. You know, there's a little truth to that. I mean, we need fat, don't we?
Yes, we do. And so there are actually essential fats, which we've talked about, the omega-3s and the omega-6s. Mm-hmm. Our body can't make them. We have to ingest them in our diets. Our brains that are coated with fat. And so, you know, when people say fish is brain food, some of that has to do with that. It's a source of these omega-3 healthy fats that help create the lining of our brain. So, yes, we absolutely do need fat. Fat slows our metabolic rate. It keeps us full faster. And choosing especially the healthier fats is definitely a great part of a diet. There's an argument right now about even saturated fat. Some of the earlier studies that suggested that they increase heart disease, well, now those have been refuted. And we're learning that saturated fat, it's different if it comes from dairy products or meat or coconut oil or chocolate. Lucky for us, the fat in chocolate turns out to be very healthy.
Yeah, don't take the chocolate away. Butter, folks, there's been a lot of controversy about butter.
Yeah, so I would say organic butter. I'm a fan of organic because I think it's better not to get the recombinant bovine growth hormone. I think it's better not to get the otherwise the hormones and antibiotics. But organic butter is probably part of a healthy diet, whether you should do it more moderately than Julia Child's did.
What about this unsalted or salted cream or salted sweet cream butter?
I think salt for most people is not an issue. For some people who are salt sensitive, it drives up their blood pressure. And so, you know, if you can discern which category you're in, we don't like people to add a whole lot of extra salt. But really, probably the problem with salt came with the processed foods, which are heavily salted, as opposed to adding just a little bit of salt.
Well, I mean, the low-fat, low-carb, the Mediterranean diet, so many diets, it's always in the news. It seems like the diet of the day.
So let's say something else about that. Maybe there isn't one perfect diet. Maybe that's why these diet wars sort of go back and forth, and that there's actually a degree of what we call biochemical individuality. So you and I and Rose might all do better eating a slightly different diet depending on our unique biochemistry. It may depend on the microbiome, which is the bacteria in our intestinal tract. It may depend on whether we're more insulin resistant, so we're someone who has that tendency towards developing diabetes. There was a study a few years ago by a Stanford researcher, Christopher Gardner, who basically said if you were insulin resistant and you got put on the low-fat diet, you didn't lose weight very easily and you were hungry all the time. But if you were insulin resistant and you got put on the low-carb diet, you did lose weight. So it may be that there's much more need to actually individualize our diet recommendations, still sticking to lots of vegetables. Vegetables are considered healthy by everybody.
Nobody disagrees with that.
Correct.
So I think our take-home message today, one size does not fit all when it comes to dieting.
I think so. And I have to say, Michael Pollan really summed it up well. He said, eat real food, not too much, mostly plants. You know, seven words, good dietary advice.
All right, Dr. Mazes, thank you very much. Folks can find out more about what you do in the center by going to the website. All folks really have to do is Google Integrative Medicine, University of Arizona Center for Integrative Medicine. It's going to pop up.
Yes, it is.
Just like we like to say, if you Google Bill Buckmaster, the Buckmaster Show will pop up on Google. So we're right up there.
There you go.
All right. Thank you. Thanks for
a pleasure to be here.
Okay. Tonight at 6 o'clock, Hugh Hewitt will be hosting a special presentation of President Obama's address to the nation about what our strategy will be in this country for dealing with the Islamic terrorists in Iraq. That's tonight at 6 o'clock on AM 1030 KVOI and, of course, online at KVOI.com. Bottled water on the Buckmaster Show, supplied by Culligan. Better water, pure and simple. Culligan for all your year-round residential and commercial water needs. Rosemary Brandt, producer, me, Bill Buckmaster. We will be back with you tomorrow for the Buckmaster Show on our Thursday edition. Until then, we urge you to listen to the other talk shows here on KVOI at 4 Tucson at 4 with Mike Shaw. Then tomorrow morning, Wake Up Tucson with Chris and Joe. Until then, have a great afternoon and evening.
Intelligent Talk 24/7, AM 1030, KVOI, Cortero, Tucson. On the web at KVOI.com.